John chapter 21, verses 15 through 18, as we prepare our hearts to gather around the Lord's table. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." And Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." The second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep. Very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." I purposely choose to stop the text right here and not go on and read John's parenthetical statement that follows. In that statement, John explains what Jesus meant when he said that someone else would tie a belt around Peter and take him where he did not wish to go. John's explanation is that Jesus said this to indicate what kind of death that Peter would have in order to glorify God. And like I said, I've always assumed he meant Peter's death rather than just his own death. In other words, he's indicating that at some point in his life, Peter is going to be arrested as well for his faith, and that arrest will lead to his own death. And according to tradition, that's exactly what happened. The problem is, for me at least, that the parenthetical statement draws a statement about the binding and the being led where you don't want to go away. It separates it from what went on at the beginning, about the feed my sheep and do you love me stuff. So it's almost as if it separates those statements from one another. They're like two individual thoughts that just butt up against one another. And after all, how many times in hearing messages or Bible lessons or whatever about Jesus, about Peter's confession at Caesarea Philippi, do we just concentrate on that aspect? The three times Jesus asks him to if you love me, the three times he says yes, and the three times he says then feed or tend my. Usually it stops right there. It's treated as a separate unit, and it never, rarely in the teaching and the preaching of this text do we hear it go on to that next statement about being led where you don't want to go. But it's clear in the text that this is all of a unit. It all goes together. There's not even a pause. Jesus says to Peter the third time, "Feed my sheep," and then he goes right into the next part. "Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt and go wherever you wished. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will fasten a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." It's all of a part. So it's clear that there's something about loving Jesus and feeding his sheep and going where you do not want to go. There's a connection there. What is that? Years ago, Pam and I were talking. I think we were in the car. She made some reference to my second wife, the one I would marry when she died in early death. I'm not sure if her dying in early death wasn't related to me being married or married to me or something. But I think it was in reference to something she did not want to do, you know. Kind of like, "Hey, you know, we ought to take a trip to Cooperstown to go to the Baseball Hall of Fame." "Yeah, that's something you can do with your second wife." You know, I think that's how it went. So I jokingly said in response, "Oh, no, baby. There's not going to be a second wife. I've done this marriage thing once, and I ain't doing it again. All right? From now on, it's dogs. It's dogs from here on out. Because they at least get the love, honor, and obey part of it, right?" So we even have an understanding. We've joked about this for years. We have even have an understanding that I don't even have to observe a mourning period after she dies before I go get the dog. She's given me permission to go straight from the funeral service to the animal shelter and get as many dogs as I want. Right. So that's the thing, though, right? That marriage binds you. It restricts you. It restricts your freedom. When I was single, I could pretty much do whatever I wanted. I could live out in the woods if I wanted, right? I could have as many dogs as I wanted. I could eat what I wanted when I wanted. I love Mexican food. Everybody, you know, chipping them. I love Mexican food, but Pam, not so much. So when we go out to eat together, we rarely go Mexican. You know, every once in a while, but we generally pick places that we both enjoy. Vacations are the same way. If it were up to me, I would probably never go to the beach because I sunburn very easily, and so I'm pitiful to look at the beach. You know, because I'm wearing a shirt and I've got an ugly hat on, and I sit under the umbrella with a towel covering my legs, and I've got FPF, you know, 500 spread all over me, and I just sit there and I read, and every once in a while I will venture out into the water, you know, with the shirt on, and you know, and then I come back and do the SPF 500 thing again, you know, this time with the sand worked into the suntan lotion, so. I'm not a real beachy person. For me, I'd much rather go to a nice cabin in the mountains and in the woods, you know, where just a real pastoral setting where I can take my books and just go and read for a week or so. That's my idea of a vacation. So in our 31 years of marriage, guess how many times we've gone to the cabin versus how many times we've gone to the beach? Right? A few times to the cabin, you know, I can get her to the cabin. The last few years, been able to get her to the cabin, but she can't last more than about 5 days or so. After about 3 days, she's bored, which means we have to go do something. So I have to take her into the city to go eat, you know, and then, you know, we'll go to Walmart or something. That's no vacation. Talk about taking places you don't want to go. Same thing with having kids, right? Kids bind you. They constrict you. Before we had kids, even while we were poor seminary students, we had a lot more freedom. When you know, if we felt like going to Denny's at 11 p.m. and splitting a piece of pie, we just did it. We just picked up and we did it. And that ended when we had kids, you know. And when they started going to school, we couldn't take vacations anytime we wanted to. We had to follow the school schedule, and we couldn't spend our money any way we wanted to. We, you know, talk about going places you don't want to go. I guarantee you there was never a moment before we had kids when Pam and I decided to go out on a date, go out to eat someplace, you know, like on a Friday night or something, and we said, hey, I know, let's go to Chuck E. Cheese. Oh, you know? Nobody would. You got to have kids to go to Chuck E. Cheese. Want to know how many times I've been to McDonald's since the kids have grown up? Yeah, I mean, I got to be desperate before I stop at a McDonald's. But you understand that going in, right? You enter into relationships, you fall in love, and that love restricts you. That love binds you. That love leads you to places that you don't want to go. Like to the movies to see Mamma Mia or something, you know? Young couple gets married. And being young, their agenda is their own happiness and fulfillment. And though they may be good-hearted and sincere, they're still burdened with the natural self-centeredness of youth. And then without fully realizing what they're getting into and all the implications of this, they begin to have children. Maybe even for immature reasons, right? Still their own happiness and self-fulfillment. They begin to have children, And then the real process of maturation starts. Because for the next 25 years or so, they learn what it means to practice self-sacrifice. All of a sudden, there are little hands, and sometimes they're not so little, right? But they're stretching out, they're demanding something of them. Their time, their money, their car keys, their sympathy, their understanding, their hearts. Their children stand before them daily and ask, "Do you love me?" And when the parents reply, "Yes," their children reply, "Well, up until now you fastened your belts and you went wherever you want to, but now we're putting a rope around you and we're taking you to places that you would rather not go. Namely, out of your natural selfishness and into a self-sacrificing maturity. And if you love Jesus, and if you accept His call, if you accept His lordship in your life, if you enter into a relationship with Him, you voluntarily are giving up your freedom. Because now, instead of just you and your spouse and your kids, and maybe for some of you, your grandkids, being the circle of your concern, Jesus looks at you and He says, Do you love me? Do you really love me? And when you say, "Oh, yes, of course," He sweeps His arms out to the entire world and He says, "And feed my sheep. Feed my sheep." I was almost late to this service last week. In fact, I probably came fairly close to not making it at all. See, as I was leaving Walkersville to come here, come to the first traffic light in Walkersville, and a truck turned left in front of me, right, crossed traffic. And as he was crossing over and making that turn, he started losing control. He started fishtailing. I don't know if he was going too fast or if he hit a patch of ice, but he started heading towards the ditch on the other side of the road. And luckily he got control and he straightened up and he went on by me. But as I drove down the road, there's nobody else on the road, right? I would have been it. And had he slid into that ditch, I would have been conscripted, right? I would have been obligated to stop and turn around and go help him. And at the very least, it would have taken, you know, as much time as it took to stop and make sure he was all right and, you know, could make the phone calls or whatever to get the truck pulled out. But if he'd been injured, if he'd have been hurt, then I would have been obligated to stay even longer and to call for the rescue squad and wait for the police and, you know, give my report and make sure that he was all right. And who knows how long that would have taken. Maybe I would have made it here, you know, in time for the sermon. Maybe I wouldn't. And then, you know, I don't know what you'd do. Richard would have to. He's always got something going on in his head. He could have just pulled one of the things out and done something, you know. But the freedom, the thing that I did not have the freedom to do at that point would have been to drive on and make it to church on time. I mean, you get that, right? That's the Good Samaritan right there, right? Two church officials are on their way to go do their thing. They've got obligations, but they're supposed to stop and help. They're conscripted at that point. We've all heard the story of a woman in the 1960s on a broad daylight in New York City being stabbed right there on the street, right there in front of everybody as people watched on repeatedly. The guy stabbed her and went away and then came back and stabbed her. And no one person, more than 30 people watched this happen, and nobody came out and helped her. Nobody called the police. Nobody called an ambulance, and she bled out on the street and died. And as Christians, we don't have a choice to just stand there and observe. That woman being stabbed, that event conscripted us. It would have forced us. We were required as followers of Jesus Christ not just to be observers, not just to drive by, not just to shut our doors and act like we didn't see it. We would have been conscripted. We would have had to have acted. We would have had to have gone someplace where we might not have wanted to go, but we had to go anyway. See, we are Christians in God's world. And He has placed us in this community. And this community, not just our families, not just our church family, but this community is His community. It's our community. These are His sheep. He's placed us in this community, and getting involved in the hurts, the darkness of people's lives is not a choice whether we want to or not. It is our responsibility. It's what it means to be consecrated. It's what it means to be baptized into the body. It's what it means to be a follower of Jesus Christ. It means that in spite of our own agendas, we have to go places we may not want to go and see things we may not want to see. Because Jesus asked us, "Do you love me?" And we said, "Yes." And He pointed to those places and He pointed to those people and He said, "Feed my sheep." And for Jesus, that obligation led Him all the way to the cross. You think Jesus had a choice about the cross? Well, yeah, but no. That's what the Garden of Gethsemane was all about, right? He had said yes way before, and that yes way before meant that He could not turn away from the cross. And Peter said yes three times after the no three times, right? He said yes three times to Jesus. And so Peter was obligated. It led all the way to his death. He didn't want to necessarily go there, but he was consecrated. He was conscripted as a follower of Jesus Christ. And so are we. He's placed us here. And there are hurts all around us. Maybe things that we don't want to see. Maybe people we don't want to be around. Maybe we don't agree with how they got here or something, but it doesn't matter. They're here. They're part of our community, and they're His sheep. "Feed my sheep," He says. It's one of the reasons why we observe the Lord's Supper, right? To remember that Jesus took it all the way. And it's this life that He calls us to. The cross and the sacrifice, the shedding of blood and the giving of body is not just a one-off event that Jesus did. It's the life that He calls us to. Life of giving up our own agendas in order to feed the sheep of His world. So we remind ourselves of that as we gather around this table. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes, because Paul invites us to examine ourselves before we partake of the Lord's Supper. And I remind you, as I try to do regularly, that this isn't a matter of examining merely your sinfulness and trying to determine whether or not this month you're worthy of participating in the Lord's Supper. If we measure ourselves that way, then none of us are worthy. But on the other hand, because of the blood of Jesus Christ, all of us have been made worthy. But it's not about that. It's simply an opportunity to take some time and to re-examine the commitments that we've made to Jesus. Maybe evaluate how we're doing at this point, and then an opportunity to kind of re-up that commitment, you know? To say yes to Him again, in the full knowledge of what it is that we're saying yes to. That we, in order to say yes to Jesus, we have to put to death some things in our lives, maybe good things even, in order to do His will. So take a moment and do just that. Spend some time with God as we prepare our hearts to receive the Lord's Supper.